podcast hosted by yours truly, BucketReviews.com, film critic and podcaster, yes, podcaster Danny Baldwin. And on this random Monday, I'm going to make two announcements up front. One, you probably saw on the blog already, I will not be doing a Sunday podcast anymore. The primary reason for this is because I don't want to alienate my listeners by doing a regular political podcast as planned. If I have something to say about politics, I'll just talk about it today on Random Monday, because, hey, it's Random Monday, and I can talk about whatever I want. Well, I can do that any day, but Random Monday just seems fitting. Also, because I need a day off. Doing this podcast 7 days a week is crazy. So, I think 6 days a week is a healthy change, and I'll be able to produce fresher, more quality content if I just have that day to myself and away from the microphone. Because it's such a tasking life here at the Bucket Land. Anyway, that's the first announcement. Number two is I will be doing YouTube reviews. And I know you're saying, what? What? He's doing YouTube reviews now, even though he needs some time off? Well, that's because we here at Bucket Reviews are trying to branch out into every social media or interactive media so that the site can be, frankly, more popular. Trying to get more viewers, trying to bring in more people. Isn't that the same thing? I'm repetitive. See, my reviews could be less repetitive, and then I would get more people, because more people would be inclined to read. So, note made. Anyway, I'm going to be doing these YouTube reviews mainly for movies that I don't have time to write reviews of, or aren't big enough for me to really write reviews of, because I won't get enough hits, and why should I waste my time? So, I'm going to be doing YouTube reviews of those, plus perhaps some big movies that I'm going to both review in print and on video, so the hits can keep on coming and keep me doing this. Anyway, your listenership is appreciated today, and today on this random Monday, I'm going to be doing essentially YouTube reviews without the video part. I'm going to be catching us up on all the movies I have not reviewed yet this summer. So without further ado, let's get into Dance Flick, the latest from the Wayans brothers. It is a truly terrible movie. And as I watched Dance Flick, I had to think, these Wayans brothers are almost engaging in some sort of bizarre racial catharsis. Because this is a racist movie. Make no mistake. The masses are giving the Wayans a pass because they're African American and because they're comedians to make a racist movie as if they're somehow just pushing the boundaries and addressing racial stereotypes, but it's a racist movie, come on. And as I watched, I just felt that for some reason they were engaging their fears about other people's perceptions of black people by showing other people's perceptions of the black community. It's a strange kind of thing because you wouldn't expect this from comedians, you would normally just shake it off. But I can't help but think the movie that has a pregnant woman deliver her baby while breakdancing with thugs on the dance floor is racist. Come on now! David Alan Greer, God bless Dag Soul, is even worse as this crony sugar bear. I don't even want to get into it. This is a terrible movie. The only time it works is when it's spoofing somewhat esoteric, and by esoteric I mean like Crash esoteric. I'm not talking Hannah Takes the Stairs here. I'm talking movies that perhaps the standard teen audience doesn't know about, even though, I don't know, maybe they get the Crash reference. It grossed a hell of a lot of money. But the Wayans do take some chances in that regard, and there's a hilarious parody of this unspoken homosexuality that lies in Zac Efron's High School Musical performance and in Zac Efron in general, and the lack of acknowledgement there. And it's really funny. So that's about the only thing I have nice to say about this movie, is this one thread involving the High School Musical parody. But otherwise, half a star for Dance Flick. Old Damien Dante Wayans, the new director, I don't know how many of these guys there are, should just crawl in a black hole somewhere. Because Marlon and Sean were actually very funny until they brought in all these Keenan and whatever, you know. Anyway, next up is My Life in Ruins, which opened to ruinous box office. You're so funny, Danny. Last weekend, it stars My Big Fat Greek Wedding juggernaut Nia Vardalos. Well, once juggernaut, because she really hasn't done anything substantive since. Remember that My Big Fat Greek Life sitcom on CBS, or that Connie and Carla movie, anybody? Probably not. But my Life in Ruins continues the bad streak for her, which I'm hoping will be broken by her return to writing and directing herself. Well, My Big Fat Greek Wedding wasn't directed by herself, but returning to filmmaking herself, per se, in I Hate Valentine's Day at the beginning of July, which is a strange release date in and of itself. But that's made for IFC, where Greek Wedding was done, so I'm hoping that's very good. But My Life in Ruins is a terrible movie. Vardalos plays this idealistic student who goes to Greece to learn, and she ends up a tour guide. That's not exactly the best break, and she ends up being cranky, and it takes a tour bus to change her life. Yeah, that's about all the theatrics you could take in a day. The humor here is even worse. The biggest joke is the Porkopi, the bus driver, a Greek, wants to be called Poopy, and his last name just so happens to be Kakas. Yeah. Do I need to say any more? There's also this terrible cringe-inducing paycheck performance from Richard Dreyfuss as the annoying tour guest who actually has a lot more bottled-up emotion behind his annoyingness than might meet the eye. Vardalos bonds with him, and everything is a-okay after a while. Doesn't that sound just jolly? And in fact, that's the pace of My Life in Ruins. This is a movie designed for 70-year-olds. If you're over 70, perhaps you will enjoy this movie and that you've regressed. That was a very offensive comment. That was an ageist comment. But you know, it's a movie for seniors going to bingo club to play in the background, for Christ's sake. This is a terrible movie. 1.5 buckets out of 4. On to something a little bit better, but not much, is Angels and Demons. Of course, the sequel to The Da Vinci Code from director Ron Howard, and a now not long-haired, but short-haired, because that's the opposite of long-haired, Tom Hanks. He once again plays Professor Robert Langdon, who's deep in a Vatican mystery. And I don't get how this one was construed as anti-Catholic, I guess by fictionalizing the Vatican altogether. But anyway, it's not offensive in the least to anyone who isn't nuts. The movie is interesting in how fast it moves. I'm surprised that it is consistently entertaining for 2 hours and 20 minutes, which is really a testament to Howard's ability to move action sequences and moving parts and everything like that. But there's no substance going on right here. And that, you know, in a way, that makes the achievement all the more miraculous that he can do an empty movie for 2 hours and 20 minutes. But it's no good. I mean, there's nothing really interesting here. It's just kind of Pulp Fiction. And I mean literally Pulp Fiction, not a Pulp Fiction homage. But it's just kind of Pulp Fiction gone to the $150 million budgets of today. And, you know, I was entertained throughout, but really only because there was a lot going on. And, you know, I don't know. This one is surprising for me because it's really pretty preposterous. It's even more preposterous than The Da Vinci Code, although thankfully it takes itself a little less seriously. And it's the essence of a summer movie. You go in, you have a bit of fun, you come out, you forget it. I'm not sure I want that to be the essence of a summer movie, but it seems to be the established American essence of a summer movie. So take with that what you will. It's not religiously offensive, people, unless you are... I don't even see how a diehard Catholic could find this offensive. But anyway, 2.5 buckets out of 4. Take with that rating what you will. I was mildly amused. I was not mildly amused, however, at Imagine That, starring Eddie Murphy, directed by new pair Casey Patrick, who is not Brian Robbins. And I actually think Brian Robbins does a lot of favors for Eddie Murphy. This movie, on the other hand, does not. Murphy stars as a high-powered stockbroker who's essentially up for a promotion. And he starts getting his advice from his previously alienated daughter, who basically spends her entire day in an imaginary realm that she is able to get into because she has a blanket draped over her head. She communicates with her friends, etc., etc., and one day she draws on his work papers and predicts amazing things. He figures from that her imaginary friends are predicting amazing stock patterns, and he will be able to essentially exploit the market for all it's worth due to this blanket. And what's especially revolting about the movie is it almost suggests, through comedy, that it's okay for him to be exploiting his daughter and making her think he really values her for these stock quotes. It really almost justifies that behavior until he gets totally manic and off the wall and breaks into her sleepover in a climactic moment to steal the blanket. This occurs when she, of course, obligatorily, ultimately gets mad at him because she sees through his games and realizes he doesn't really love her after all. It's a tough moment, you know? So he's still in manic phase and trying to steal the blanket in a climax that's not explained whatsoever. Why will he be able to get these things with the blanket? She communicates with the imaginary friends with the blanket. He can't communicate with the imaginary. He pretends to communicate with the imaginary friends. But the movie shows him in this climax with this blanket over his head, looking at stock charts, and it doesn't make any sense at all. He's not even trying to communicate with these friends. I don't know if I totally missed something big and implied, which I doubt, or if the movie doesn't make any sense, which it doesn't. Then, of course, you got the really sappy conclusion, of course, concluded by a musical number of the Beatles, All You Need Is Love. I don't need to say anything more. This is a terrible movie. Seems to be a recurring theme of today. Maybe I just don't review movies in print that I really don't like. One bucket out of four, imagine that. Ugh. That's all I have to say. Next up is Land of the Lost, a movie even worse than Imagine That. Talk about summer
rejects.
Stars Will Ferrell, of course, in a, I don't want to say parody of the old 1960s show. This is essentially the equivalent. If you've ever seen the show, it's, to say the least, pretty ridiculous. It looks terrible in hindsight. This is essentially the $100 million budget version of that. It's not even an homage to the show as Get Smart was last summer. It is a straight-up remaking of the show, but with expensive effects. And as a result, you get all of the emotional detachment, you get all of the unfunny stuff. It's really bad. Ferrell just seems to be doing anything for laughs. There is really only one sequence with the movie's villain that I thought was remotely funny and visually interesting. It's a real, real disappointment coming from Brad Silberling, who directed A Series of Unfortunate Events and Moonlight Mile very well, but this is just unbearable. Danny McBride essentially plays the same character he did in Tropic Thunder, too, interestingly enough. And the female lead is as blank as a white wall. It is, oh my god! I see, this is why I didn't review this movie. It just left me speechless. It's really bad. Don't see it. Oh god. Half a bucket out of four for Land of the Lost. And slightly better, but not much, still mediocre, is Night at the Museum 2, but take your kids to this over Land of the Lost for sure. Land of the Lost really isn't even a kids movie. You rated PG-13. But it was marketed that way. I don't know why. Money, that's why. I know why. Night at the Museum 2, once again directed by Sean Levy. This one's essentially the same thing, but worse. Perhaps worse because you've already seen it. Ben Stiller reprises his role as Larry Daly, but this time he's in the Smithsonian, not the Museum of Natural History. So he goes to Washington, D.C., because the old museum is now upgrading to these neat holographic exhibits that are going in to replace all the old brick-and-mortar exhibits. And said brick-and-mortar exhibits, which, of course, come to life through this magical, I don't even know how to explain it. I don't think the movie even knows how to explain it. Magical stone portal. Anyway, the exhibits are going to Washington, D.C. for mostly storage at the Smithsonian. Larry, of course, decides to come rescue them because they're humans to him, essentially. So he somehow sneaks through Smithsonian security. There's actually a very funny scene with Jonah Hill, but it's one of the very few funny scenes the movie has to offer. And he sneaks through the security and gets down to them. And when they are once again returned to life, there's a little problem. They are imperiled by ancient pharaoh Ka-Moon-Ra, who's also down there. He's played by Hank Azaria in one of the most annoying,
grating performances I have ever seen in a comedy. It's so painfully unfunny, this characterization, making this Pharaoh essentially a gay, lisping idiot. It is... Whole camera time. Don't go see this movie anyway. If you don't have kids who really want to see it, it's not worth it. That's about as deep as my criticism goes today. Everybody's the same. Except for Amy Adams. Amy Adams is really terrific and even attractive as Amelia Earhart. She is just so good in this movie, but... The rest of the cast, Robin Williams, Christopher Guest, Steve Coogan, Ricky Gervais, you know, all the general stuff. Even Bill Hader are just mediocre. This is so obligatory. It's such a money-incentivized sequel. When are they not? But it's never as transparent as this. And I hear they're doing a Night at the Museum 3 soon, which is going to be really even worse. It's just a big budget cash-in time. Why they got to spend... $150 million and send it to IMAX to make a good cash-in sequel. I don't know. Or rather, a bad cash-in sequel. But that's Night at the Museum 2's fate, and it's pretty uninteresting, except for Amy Adams. That Amy Adams, she's something. But anyway, that's about all the reviews I have for you today. If you like today's episode, I'm going to be doing these on YouTube. Perhaps a little bit more fluidly. I went totally unscripted, totally unprepared today. I literally just have the 6 titles in front of me. So I hope you found it somewhat interesting. This has been the BucketCast. Please subscribe to us on iTunes, rate us 5 stars, all that good stuff. Send in your comments, questions, whatever, to webmaster@bucketreviews.com or Twitter handle BucketReviews. And until next time, this has been Danny Baldwin. Sand Bucket out.
We're on the front line. I get handed down the news. We're on the front line.